Welcome back to Zero Trust World 2025 Part 2. We're back to talk to more people from the Zero Trust World Conference. We've got more interviews with amazing guests. We also went out into the wilds of Florida to a local bar with Adopting Zero Trust podcast to understand the real America.
So we mentioned in our intro that there was news of a big party. Well, more than one, because what you don't see is how much fun that we all had.
Yeah, that's true. You know, work hard, party hard. Otherwise, we get burnt out, right? And that was so clear. And I guess coming from the UK for the first time in America, which me and Ed were, and seeing how they party, we're put to shame with our and our own sandwiches. It's quite depressing coming back, actually.
Yeah, it was everything about it. The people, the crazy dances, which we'll show.
It was great, makes me think of all those high school movies where they're mean to the nerds.
It was like a reenactment live.
It was a Comic-Con. We went to a Comic-Con and we made a little bit of a statement, you know, so we went as V for Vendetta and as Tank Girl, which are British comic book characters.
I love the picture that we took in front of that red team, blue team sign. That looked
really good. really fun. And everyone was in costume, and we actually got it cleared to do a little bit of filming at that after party.
There it is, and yours just now.
Oh, there we go. So yeah, we got cleared to film, so we were actually encouraged to go up to all of these unsung heroes and to have a conversation with them when they were a little bit relaxed and very happy and also looking fantastic. So let's show some of that, right?
Hi guys, and welcome to the end of our Zero Trust Conference adventure. We are at the most radical party that the US can provide right now, thanks to Fred Locker and its sponsors, and it is amazing. It's a nerd party, of course, so we are all dressed as comic book characters, and we're going to introduce you to all of the heroes and their real life roles real soon.
Catch you soon.
And the artwork, mwah. And you are like a piece of artwork yourself. It's amazing. Do you drive around like this? We were wondering, just like around the town, dressed like this.
Yeah,
we're
gonna drive home like this.
Are you gonna get pulled over?
I've been pulled over before.
Awesome. Just like, I'm a front guy, it's my car.
And sometimes I go to a lot of car shows too. I have the gun back there. Bags of money. There's a bomb back there to come to the lab.
Okay. Whoa, that got real. I mean, you are the Joker, right? So, there you go. There you go. Some real life Joker right here, guys. So, who have you come to the party today?
I have come as Fat Thor / the Dude. Because the robe really brings the room together.
I'm going to bring the mousey for a while, you know?
That's what
I said
to do.
Right, okay.
Superhero job is being a systems administrator. Because network security is very important in our organization.
We all know that. You can't get cybersecurity without good network.
Exactly.
So what's your real life superhero job? Because we're all superheroes, right?
I'm a sysadmin.
Yeah, that's nice. The best superhero. We've dedicated an entire episode to how sysadmins are the secret heroes of every single system in the world that we've never. We see you.
Appreciate it. I mean, it's a lot of work. I was a waiter back in college, so like I know how to deal with like the business owners who are like grumbling about it and don't want to spend the money on the security. But at the same time, it's like
your ass. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Easy. And that's a good. Let's go bust now. the UK made sure that I asked you this. I promised the podcast. I'm so sorry. Yeah, you can. I'm a real-life superhero.
You know, all of these guys are unsung heroes, system administrators, network engineers, analysts, you know, every day working their butts off to keep things safe and working. So that's when you need to, every now and again, like you said, you've got to let your hair down, go a bit crazy.
For the conference, where we spoke to HATS AI about the future of Zero Trust and AI as a service. HATS AI is a technology company, and they specialize in providing AI as a service, and they're basically tailored towards MSPs and small to medium-sized businesses. They were founded in 2023, so they're a fairly new company, and they're headquartered in New York, USA. So let's go and speak to them.
Okay, so we're joined by Mark from HATS AI. Do you want to tell us a bit more about what you do and what HATS AI do?
Yeah, happy to. My name is Mark. I'm the AI Adoption Manager at HATS AI. HATS AI is the secure AI platform for MSPs where they can use AI internally and then sell AI as a service to their customers and build an entire AI offering around AI.
Okay.
So when we discuss AI as a service, what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, there are about a billion different ways to use AI, and small businesses are inevitably going to reach out to their MSPs to ask for help navigating the landscape.
Absolutely.
So there's a big education component to it. Security, so using AI models without your data going to a training model, that's a big part of it.
And that's the biggest problem when we look at AI, is that you're actually giving most of your data to Google or Amazon to build up their AI profile. Yeah. So how do we really keep those companies safe? What does your company do to do that?
Yeah, we have a read-only format, zero retention policy. So your data stays in your own tenant.
Mm-hmm.
So the MSP can build out tenants for all of their customers, and the data that's put in stays in that tenant. So it essentially just blocks off any of your prompts, any of your outputs from going to a third party.
That's amazing.
So what does Zero Trust mean to you?
Zero Trust means I don't trust any company with my data.
So, that's how we roll.
Yeah, completely. So what would, if you had a top tip for anyone, whether they're a professional or maybe someone who doesn't know very much about IT or cybersecurity or anything like that at all, to stay safe?
It's just get started with AI. It's use a secure AI platform, but just get started, because the more you can learn about it now and learn about the different models and how they work, the more equipped you're going to be in the future when things get even more convoluted and confusing.
Of course, yeah.
And how do you feel about DeepSeek and all the revelations that have come out over the last few days?
There are, like I said, there's about a billion different ways that AI can be used, and people are going to use it for whatever they want. We don't have DeepSeek on our platform.
That's probably good.
Probably good statement.
Considering that we're red teaming that right now to find out what data it's stealing from us to our, you know, potential state enemies there.
still validating a lot of those.
Which is
on great. on our platform, we do have more than 20 different LLMs that you can use.
Absolutely.
Day one.
One of the biggest problems that I find in cybersecurity, and that we get comments quite a lot, is that people are going, "Can I just put my whole database on this AI model and use ChatGPT?" And the security staff are having to run over, like, "No!" before they press the go button.
All our USPs are gone.
Is that something that you're finding coming through as well, that people are trying to do that other companies?
Yeah, what we see is people want to use, we say they want to put the proverbial house on the moon.
Right.
With AI, they want to start doing, revamping their entire business, but it's important to start slow and understand what AI is and what it isn't. And a lot of times what they want to do, you don't need to go through your whole database into an AI model. You need it to look at three or four files at a
time.
Or
a line of code, right?
Exactly.
All right, you've been amazing. Cool. Actually, one more question. What is your comic book character costume for tomorrow night?
Have one.
Oh, many people have said that.
You're not the first.
No, Amazon Prime right now.
Yeah. If I had brought one, it would be probably something from One Piece.
Oh my god, amazing! I'm a massive fan.
The straw hats, and we're hats, and I feel like there's so much potential there that I didn't take advantage of. But.
I dress my children up in One Piece outfits and send them out all over the place to cosplay shows. It's great.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you so much
for
your time today. We've had a great time.
Cheers. Thank you.
Take care.
Well, here's some news. The CyberShow have a special offer to share with you. Thanks to our friends at ThreatLocker, we've got $200 off registration for Zero Trust World 2026. Yay! And the code you'll need is ZTWCybershow26.
There's a kind of, I won't say confusion, I'll just say woolly thinking that's out there, where people are mixing up trust and assurance. And those are really different things. And so let's go back to a central tenet. Let's go back to some core concept in trust. NSA again, you know, trust but verify.
Yeah.
And it's the verify part, you know, that's there's doing a lot of heavy lifting with verification. So a lot of trust models are where you've moved the principle that you need to trust. So that company that we were just talking to, their business model is you can trust us, but you can't trust any of these other AI operators who might steal your data. Therefore, we're going to broker your data between AI compute nodes somehow. Yeah. But they haven't said how. But most importantly, they haven't said how you would know that we're doing that, how we could prove that to you in an absolutely watertight way. There's so much to unpack about ideas that people have about zero trust and how they're going to implement a business model, and the reality of how that might play out once you actually start examining it in terms of trust models and what's real and what's not. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's really difficult to essentially use an LLM and say that it's zero trust, because you have to trust someone's large language model, and it has to be compared against other people's data. Okay, it's anonymized, but maybe you've got data that is you don't want to share, because if you do share that data, it impacts your business. I'm not sure if companies are aware that when they're using LMMs, that's what they're sacrificing, as well as copyright.
A cake and eat it problem, but the same one that came up chatting to the bot hunter about deep linking, about scraping and stuff like that, and the problem of APIs. You want something at the same time you don't want it. You have a situation where you want to give someone your data to analyze in a certain way, but you don't want to give them the data. The only solution to that problem is you don't give it to anyone. You do it in-house on your own hardware in your own way. And that's the solution to that problem.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was about to say with these AI models. The only way that there's any real way of trusting that the data stays with you and not on some sort of training platform is if you're using solely offline language models, that you have complete control over the system, and it is not feeding back to a host system or any kind of external hosted software, anything that basically takes it off of your hardware.
And I think that's what Hats AI are trying to do, right?
Yes. You know,
they are trying to help. They've identified that people are going to use them, and that it is a security incident waiting to happen. It's already happened.
Yeah, they've identified a security hole in the systems.
And that people will use it.
Yeah, where they've seen employees taking, they don't want to spend hours manually doing their job. They think they can kind of expedite the process by offloading it to an LLM. And then suddenly they're using ChatGPT, which is an open AI model, which is then going to be using that data, which is why I made the joke in the interview about giving away all the USPs, because that's exactly what's happening. You're just giving your company's data to whoever the hell you don't even know who's at the other end going to be using it, or who will end up using it, because the language model uses that data to train itself and then gives it to someone else as a suggestion. And then suddenly your company's data is just... Yeah, it's not yours anymore.
It's my great.
This is what they're kind of addressing, this problem where they want people to be able to expedite and use language models, but keep that data your data at the same time.
Oh. Yeah, can I talk about that a little bit? Because we've encountered this problem before in communities, in distributed networks. And where we've seen it before is in, say, BitTorrenting. Distributed file systems where you need certain number of participants, but you can get leeches. You can get people who hit the system in a read-only fashion. They'll take stuff, but they won't participate in the... it's more than uploading. It's keeping that data alive. A distributed dynamic file system like that relies on on data being stored, enough of it being stored somewhere in fragments that it's recoverable, that it stays alive. And there are two competing models of artificial intelligence going on at the moment, and I don't think people maybe realize that. One is a sort of participatory model, which is much more like the old open source kind of sharing. We share stuff, and by doing that, what we do is we build up bigger and stronger models. Every time I make a query to an AI agent, I supply it with data. Simultaneously, I expect two things. I expect an output, an answer, but I also expect that my data will be used and incorporated into future versions of the model. In other words, the model is learning from my use of it. And that's kind of how the old search engines work in a way, because what Google used to do, you know, Google, other search engines exist, and certainly other search engines are a hell of a lot better these days. But the original sort of Sergey and Brin kind of page rank thing was creating a community of links. So what it was doing is it had a network effect of becoming more and more useful as more and more people put stuff up on the web that you could search. And unfortunately, it doesn't work quite the same way with AI and training. If you give your data into a simulated annealing neural network, which then derives weights from that and embeds them deeply in a system that can't be scrutinized and it's illegible, you don't know when they're going to pop out again and in which form. So if you're engaging in a participatory model of AI, you're leaking stuff all the time every time you use it, and then people don't know that yet. They think of it, so it's much more, it's that the BitTorrent problem is, to what extent are you going to play the game? And I think we'll see two very different strands of AI emerging. Yeah. Ones which are kind of public, and they're publicly owned, and everybody expects that what they put into them is shared ad infinitum. And specialized AI tools which are used for handling sensitive data. And they're not going to be the same things, because we've already been doing that for decades. And if you think about what Google is as a search engine, it is a place of unique digital privilege, of unique intelligence acquisition. If you're a company that was able to interpret all of the world's searches, imagine the colossal economic advantage that gives you. You know, you're able to see what everyone, so you know what everybody's researching on, you know what everybody's reading, you know where everybody's going with their company. You're already ahead of them in every single way. Well, if you create an AI or a company which contains an AI or AIs which is doing that, it's accumulating colossal intelligence on all of the people that use it.
And you know, HATS AI are going to be ahead of that curve, and they're going to be collecting a lot of that data. So, and it's focused on zero trust. It's focused on cybersecurity, and that's good. They're a good AI company in those regards, and they're using it for the right thing, which is what we like to see when we see AI being used. It should be advancing and securing things and not making it worse.
It's their principles that are the most important thing. It's their intention and their values. It's like, we believe that there can be an optimistic and positive use of AI, and that we can implement these trust requirements that our customers are going to give us. And if they're able to do that and honestly do it and stick to it, great. We need more of that.
We're now going to talk to Tech Degenerates all about how community support and career development play a huge role in cybersecurity and also in Zero Trust.
Hey, but did you just call them Tech Degenerates?
That's their name.
I went to a conference once and I didn't know what I was going as, because I'd forgotten. And I just wrote on the badge Rebel Scum. And loads and loads of people came up to me and said, "Oh, Rebel Scum, that's great." So I think Tech Degenerates is a great name. They sound good. But I like their name already.
Yeah, let's hear from them.
Hi, guys. We are talking to Tech Degenerates today. Can you tell us all about what you do in cybersecurity?
Well, our goal is really to build community within the MSP and even the broader tech community, just to raise the bar and give a forum for individuals to collaborate, build relationships, and actually grow as individuals in the tech community, and without, you know, any agendas or anything like that that would typically buying them. Mm.
So what would you like to see most of this event? What are you really interested to speak about and see and witness around Zero Trust World?
Fair Liquor puts on a very good event. They do a good job of bringing a very diverse group of people together. And honestly, what I'd like to see is just, again, knowledge being raised. I mean, the classes they're putting on, things along that nature, along the line, are really good. Mm. And so again, that whole theme of raising the bar is something that I'm really excited to see.
So what are some of the best cybersecurity tips that you might give someone, especially in the wider community, when they're thinking about their personal security?
So you're not alone. You're never alone, yeah. Right? Because there's the MSP world, especially in the United States, is very community-driven, and a lot of us are friends, even with our competitors. So I think it's knowing that you're not alone, one, but also making friends and joining the community of the people that do incident response for a living is always a great thing. And there actually is a really good session on incident response today done by Art O'Kane. So if you guys can catch it, by all means do so, because it's going to be fantastic.
The community was really, really important when cybersecurity began around 20, 30 years ago. Are we seeing an increase or a decline in that community spirit as we go into the future?
I think there's more, actually, of the community spirit, just from the standpoint of we're all getting herded, forced, cattle-driven into this weird GRC landscape, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The UK is very different from the way that it is here in EMEA and things along those lines, because you have very different requirements than what we do. Mm-hmm. But we're starting to see that happen here as well, in certain states more so than others. So I think it's leaning on our friends. Like, how have you gone with this control? How have you fixed that thing? How do I do this particular thing? So there's a lot of conversations in the how do I, what does that look like?
Yeah.
Oh, there's different ways of doing certain things, and everybody sharing that information around. So that's been exceptionally helpful.
Yeah.
And we need more of that open forum, because what we get with companies competing with one another is they can close doors and shut up. And that is really, really detrimental to cybersecurity, because we have to share that information.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The collaborative space, like Don was mentioning, is really key. Best practice sharing, things along that line. I think, honestly, it's been kind of interesting watching, like you mentioned GRC and Open Europe and things like that. And over the United States, it's been all about security, but less about the GRC component, and watching those things actually meld together. Mm-hmm. And what security is one focus, but then GRC is a whole different world, and watching those two kind of start to meld is kind of fun to watch that.
So, and then tagging on to that, I think that some of the more mature organizations here are looking at frameworks. Like, how do we follow the framework to actually go down through the cybersecurity piece to it? Does that make more sense? So, again, leaning into that GRC world of things.
Yeah.
And one, I think that keeps it more open, because frameworks, there's no cost to looking at a framework, right?
Yeah.
And those are how you follow a best practice.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've got a best practice, we've got a framework, we're leaning more into doing things in a collaborative manner, and everyone wins at that point.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's so cool. I was just going to say, what does Zero Trust mean to you guys?
Zero Trust is the allowance of who needs it when they need it exclusively. And obviously there's a give and take on there on actually functioning as an organization versus locking the whole world down. Mm-hmm. But really it's about taking least privilege and using that as the basis for everything, and then layering on from there.
Yeah, for me it's deny everything.
that's usually my go-to,
kind of mine as well,
right?
Yeah.
Call me if you need me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Deny everything, but allow what you need to function. And I think it's the finding the way through to functionality in all of that. That's obviously that's the challenge. But I think for puzzle solvers, right, that's where we all thrive, and we love that. Like, okay, we're gonna deny everything, but how do we find the way through?
Yeah. Do you guys have any kind of final tips for the community?
Join the Tech Degenerates. Mm-hmm. You can find us at thetechdegenerates.com, of all places, right? And we're a Discord server, so it's free to join. And we are completely agnostic as well. So whether you're an MSP, a solution provider, a vendor, does not matter.
Yeah.
Come join us.
Internal IT, but anybody, a tech enthusiast, we're looking for people that contribute to help raise the bar for the tech community as a whole.
Yeah, we can't keep the world safe from the bad guys unless we all work together to do so. And it's really, really important to have a platform like this so that we can do that. And we can keep all our money in our banks where they belong.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you.
Some news for you guys. Cybershow have a special offer, a discount of $200 off a Zero Trust World 2026. Yay! The code you'll need is CTW Cybershow 26.
Safety override code accepted.
they sound like an interesting bunch, and definitely we want to talk to them a little bit more. Because I mean, this on their stated values, they just sound good.
I think that this company are probably from all different areas and walks of life, and what they're trying to do is find a middle ground and find a consensus.
I also think that tech people carry quite a heavy burden in that, you know, and it's that, well, we built this and now it's going wrong. We're kind of responsible. And so I think there's a real urgency amongst the tech community to get political and talk about actual ways to solve problems.
Because we are designing all the systems and we're incorporating AI, and that's come up a lot, and yeah, it's rapidly moving. And we see that, you know, dare I bring him up again, but Elon Musk, right? He's a tech billionaire. He's now in the parliament. We're seeing techno-fascism across the world, but actually we're seeing tech companies that aren't doing that, that are working collaboratively with one another, that are trying to walk away from that sort of behaviour and go back.
They are a resistance. You know, wherever you've got techno-fascist movement, you've got a resistance, right? Yeah. And so, you know, my kind of question was going to be, you know, how much of the resistance were represented at Zero Trust World?
I see all of it. I think we spoke to a couple of people who were opposite, but then they weren't, because they're sat on a table and they're realizing that actually this is a conversation that they've missed, that they haven't had, that they needed to have an international conversation, not such an internal one with the same people and the same people's faces that you see every day in your small town. But getting around the table and talking to people from all different cultures and all different ways of life, for someone who outrightly said that they are absolutely against anything like that, and it's all should just, you know, stay in our own state, stay in our own home and never really go out, for them to turn around and say, this is needed, we need more people to be like this. And it's like, yeah, well, we do. And you need to leave that behind, because we're inheriting the earth. The nerds are inheriting, the geeks are inheriting the earth. And there are two ways that we can do that. And we can be the nasty nasty, you know, the nasty geek, or we can be the nice geek.
Yeah.
We need more nice geeks coming to the top, and we need to support them to do that, actually.
Mm.
You're always going to make money from tech. You don't need to be extracting money unethically, because you're already going to make money anyway.
Some more nice things to say about Florida. Did you see any flamingos? Flamingos?
I did see an alligator, which had eaten a very large fish. So apparently, lovely birds. I'm a bird fan. And the weather's beautiful and the sunset's great. Yeah. If I could go and live there without worrying about the impeding ocean coming in and destroying the entire state, I'd be up for it, to be honest. Mm. Well, and that's another thing, is that you're looking out and it's beautiful. It's probably one of the most naturally beautiful places in the world. And you've got the most beautiful, delicate birds eating out of a puddle with a diaper or a nappy in it, and a load of trash, plastic trash. You just think, what have we done? And I think that was really striking. You look up, you look at the trees, very beautiful, and you look back at the concrete roads that you've created and the rubbish on the streets, and it's like, okay, great. This is just showing you what we're doing, actually, every single day. It'd be nice to actually go and see some of Florida that's not pavement, I guess. Mm. And where we were as well, a lot of it's set up for Disney.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of hotels and tourist shops. So it was really good that we'll talk about it, but we got out of the tourist strip.
And that's a nice thing to say about Florida. I mean, as a kind of prejudice-busting statement, right, that, like, you know, there were not people walking around with automatic assault rifles.
No, and they weren't.
Because some countries there are. You go to the shop and there's, like, three or four dudes walking around with, like, AKs or, you know, or Uzi slung over their shoulder, and like, that's a different vibe altogether. And that's not Florida. Yeah,
what's that, London?
Yeah, wow. Well, let's not get into that today. Yeah,
down London, I guess. Yeah, don't get on that bus too long. Yeah. Take the wrong tube. But most of London's very safe and fine. But you know, it was fun. Florida was great. Do you know what? Taxi drivers are great. They all own businesses, so that was a strange one.
Mm.
Yeah, I think taxi drivers are fun the world over, aren't they? I that's why I hate robo-taxis and automatic cars and stuff, because the world would be a much poorer place without taxi drivers.
Right.
Like, frankly, you know, it's like, if you want a random conversation that's probably, like, quite real, go and talk to a taxi driver. They're like kind of modern priest, really, like a therapist or something, aren't they, you know? So tell us about what Zero Trust is. And it's about managing and being mindful of implicit trust. really. Yeah. So what is implicit trust? Implicit trust to it's a weird one where you don't think about trust relationships because it's built into the fabric, the environment and everything that you're doing. So when you step out of the house, you have a sort of implicit trust that you're not going to be immediately robbed at knife point or, you know, beaten up or whatever. So, you know, that's the word that we use for that is security. And it's the part of security, as Bruce Schneier would put it, is the psychological aspect of security, like the security as a feeling, right? Now, when you're dealing with security as a feeling, it's an implicit trust because you can't think to yourself every time you walk out the house, shit, am I gonna, you know, wind up in a gunfight or whatever? But then it becomes like, so if we're saying zero implicit trust, in a way we're saying zero security. And it's like, uh-oh, rewind, because we just got into a, you know what, zero security. You know, I thought you guys were security engineers, right? So, there's actually a bit of a paradox or a difficult stumbling block built into it that way, because so it's about examining implicit trust and all the situations that you go into where you think, can I relax, can I let my hair down, can I be with people on the level, can I let my guard down, and you know, the psychological problem with a lot of society now is people's guards are way up. Like they're way up because they're constantly exposed to hostility in one form or another. So, you know, when you go to a party, right, you let your guard down. You engage with people in a different way. And that's interesting because that's an interesting forum within which to discuss trust. Yeah?
This is The Cyber Show, and thank you for watching part 2. Part 3 coming soon.